Hello, everybody. Today is Wednesday, May 11th, 2022, and welcome to Big Screens and TV Streams live from the Grand Forks Best Source Studios. For those watching live, please interact with us by calling or texting in your questions or comments at 701-213-0863, or contribute comments and questions in the live chat by tuning in live every Wednesday at 2 p.m. on gfbestsource.com. I'm Dale. Joining me today is Paul. Welcome.
Everywhere I go. Yeah, fix that, Katie. Come on. Amateur hour over here.
Yes. What we got going on? Amateur me. Amateur me. Yes. It's no longer May the 4th. Thank goodness. And fixing my awful camera work is producer Katie. Welcome.
I'm actually height level this time.
Woo!
Sorry, wow. It's the chair.
Yeah, they're all at the same height now. It makes things easier.
Yes,
well,
yes.
For you guys, because I'm short. I'm using the old stool.
Old school.
Oh,
yes.
I didn't even. Oh, okay.
Last week I was down to here.
Oh no.
Now I'm back up here.
Yeah, you had the booster. I remember last week. I think right.
Well, I tried it and it just failed.
No.
Well, judging from my camera angle, it looks like I'm sitting on the floor too.
Oh no!
Come on. Okay. All right.
Dale is mega fail, but you know what isn't a mega fail is our good friends at the Southtown Poorhouse, where every day is a great day at the Southtown Poorhouse. Stop in for your favorite drinks and, of course, happy hour with half-off apps and taps every day from 4 to 6 p.m. You can't forget about the Buck Burgers, or on Tuesdays, and the awesome steak specials on Thursdays at 6. Make sure to check out the Southtown Poorhouse events page to find out when your favorite band is playing. This weekend on Friday, they have Rhyme or Reason, and on Saturday is Some Shitty Cover Band. So, every day is a great day at the Southtown Poorhouse. They are located at 2015 Library Circle, next to the Grand Cities Mall, open Tuesday through Saturday from 4 p.m. to 2 a.m. And they're now hiring with great pay, flexible hours, part-time or full-time employee discounts, and free cover on band nights.
I've always questioned that Some Shitty Cover Band, just the name. I mean, because it's a catchy name, but you'd think, like, for advertising reasons that you couldn't say it. But I think shit is, like, acceptable now in pretty much every platform.
It's getting there. It's getting there. I've seen them. They're a good band. They don't have...
Katie Cameo.
Oh, shoot. Oh, that's a different soundboard. But
no, they're really good. They play music from my generation, so...
Yes. I can relate to them. Yes, me as well, so... Yeah. Definitely make sure to check them out this weekend. Good stuff. Sam, we're going to kick things off today. I think this is a first one that came out like since the show started at the beginning of the year. The first Marvel Cinematic Universe film that launched during the start of the show, because I believe we started, I think, like a week or two after Spider-Man No Way Home launched. So this is the first Marvel Cinematic movie that launched in theaters since we started. Because I think that the Venom movie wasn't, the Sony Spider-Man movies, or at least the Venom movies, aren't officially part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I don't think.
Yeah, I'm not sure. And I thought the Ten Rings, but maybe that came out before we started? Because I think that was in our year review. So, yeah, you're probably right.
Yep. The Shang-Chi, that was prior to Spider-Man No Way Home. So, okay. But, that one was... So I believe this is the first official Marvel Cinematic Universe film. Of course, we're talking about Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. So yeah, that's and this is interesting because they brought back Sam Raimi to direct this one, his first comic book movie since the Spider-Man trilogy of films. The last one was in 2007. His first time directing a movie since 2013. So since then he's only just done like a handful of like TV episodes and shorts. So. Yeah, big release, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. We saw this on opening day there.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, whatever Sam Raimi was doing in his free time, he was doing it right because he knocked this one out of the stadium. I mean, I thought this was way better than Spider-Man No Way Home. I mean, this is probably one of the... This might be up there with my favorite Marvel movie that I've seen.
Wow, that is very, very high acclaim. Yeah, so, yeah, I was just as big a fan of this. I still have to give it a little bit of hindsight perspective, see how it ranks in the greater scheme of things, but I definitely put it in the top tier. But
I'll have to do a second watching to really do, but, you know, my first impressions of when I saw it was like, whoa, this was not what I was expecting, and it was nonstop entertainment. Yeah, I literally thought I was going to like piss myself in the theater because I had to go to the bathroom so bad, but I couldn't leave because it was like nothing but constant action.
Yeah, and you know, Sam Raimi has that horror background with not exclusively horror, but of course he had, you know, the Evil Dead trilogy of films and a few other like scary flicks.
He did Evil Dead. He did Evil Dead?
Yep. Evil Dead 1, 2 and Army of Darkness.
No, I didn't know that was Sam. I heard about Darkman.
Yeah, and Darkman, yep.
But I didn't know he did the Evil Deads.
Yep. Oh. Yep. That was where guy's big breakout now start.
He just went that much higher up on my list of awesome directors.
And, it's pretty much how, you know, a good reason to kind of the shift in tone for this Doctor Strange, the Multiverse of Madness. It's almost like the equivalent of not an all-out scare horror flick, but I'd say veering in that direction because the setup for this is...
Well, now I can see a lot. I wish I would have known that before because now I can see a lot of, like, similarities between those movies and the things that kind of happen in this one.
Yeah, he kind of, you know... Like the actions, some characters' demises in here. We'll start off with some non-spoiler stuff, but then we'll make sure to give a spoiler warning for those who haven't seen one. We'll make sure to do like a 2 to 3 minutes of spoiler talk.
How long has it been
here.
Out now?
About 4 days, 4 or 5 days. Yeah. Yeah, 5 days.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you haven't seen it, screw it.
Yeah.
You
know, but okay.
Spoiler away.
Okay, yeah. Spoiler away for the rest of this. We kind of gave our general high
recommendation. We're doing a review of Doctor Strange. Mm-hmm. If you haven't seen it, then... Don't watch the review of it.
Yes, yes. You have been warned.
Yes.
All right. So, yeah, the setup for this is, you know, it's kind of running off of... I'd say you probably don't even really need to see the first Doctor Strange movie, actually. You probably should see Spider-Man No Way Home, because this kind of really takes up after this, where in that movie, Doctor Strange, he screws up casting that spell. And that's what opened up the quote-unquote multiverse, where you know all the time dimension and multiverse hopping can happen, and that's hence the title of this movie, Multiverse of Madness. And the other two main things I would recommend seeing for this would be WandaVision off Disney Plus. I'm glad that's of all the old Disney Plus shows, Marvel shows I saw, that was the only one I saw since I just started Disney Plus like a couple months ago. And of course, Moon Knight, since that's a new series. But and then you mentioned a couple key What If episodes also, right?
Yeah, and it didn't really follow those. Like, I thought it was going to go off of the Doctor Strange What Ifs, but it had really nothing to do with that. I mean, there was some things that were input in there, like the, you call them the evil Doctor Strange. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't like the What Ifs. I don't know if you ever got a chance to watch them since I talked to you.
I meant to, but I didn't get around to it. But I remember hearing how like I think Peggy's kind of spinoff character is Captain Britain, right?
Yep. Those are one of them in there. But you know, going back to what you were talking about with him doing like the Evil Dead, like, you know, because you got basically zombie Doctor Strange, and that now I'm recalling it, like those effects were very. Very similar to the demons in Evil Dead.
Yeah, like you could see the similarities from Sam Raimi's work and just the general darker tone. I won't say it's as dark and gritty as like the most, not all, but most of the DC films are, but compared to your average Marvel film, this is like the way the action is and the special effects, like you mentioned.
Or how you have the Scarlet Witch and, you know, she's
going full on evil.
Yeah. Okay. So you know, let's just throw the spoilers right out the window here. Okay. So if you've seen the movie, you're gonna enjoy this. If you haven't, well then we're gonna probably ruin it for you. Mm-hmm. But so you got Professor X.
Yes.
Shows up in there, and now he's in the mine. Remember when she came up behind him? She was like full-on demon from Evil Dead.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it was like there was like no comparison between the one in the basement of Evil Dead and her coming up behind him and grabbing him, you know, from behind, and I won't ruin it beyond that.
Yeah, yeah. I think we should probably jump back just a smidge, because before we get to that part, the main how we get there is there's a character early on that Doctor Strange meets called America Chavez.
Okay, actually, so I had to look that up, and that's something I wanted to touch on for this, because I was really upset in the movie because all of a sudden they went into this her, you know, two moms is where she comes from, and I was like, God, you know, Hollywood, they always got to throw the LGBTQ thing into every movie that they do. But then I looked up this America Chavez, which I think is the stupidest name on earth.
I believe that is her actual comic book
background. Yeah, so this was a comic book that came out in, I think it was 2020?
Yeah, fairly recent character.
And she was one of the first LGBTQ female comic book characters. And I didn't understand like why they would do this, except if you're going to create this multitude of universes, her power was actually creating portals to go between universes. So as opposed to like being like, oh, they got to throw in some LGBT thing. Well, no, they actually like they threw in a character that needed to have the ability to make portals between multiverses. So then I wasn't so upset about it.
Yeah, they don't really touch on that in the film, I believe.
And she's got a whole bunch of powers that you kind of get hints of them in the movie. You know, when she punches that glass, like she has one of her powers is she has like, you know, some really super hard plasma type of punching ability powers, whatever. The ability to portal, I don't think was one of like her big ones. Invulnerability. So she's actually got a lot of big things.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, she's introduced as a very powerful character, one of the few characters with like Doctor Strange that can actually travel between all these multiverses. And
but Doctor Strange can't even travel between them.
Yeah. He unintentionally opened up the portal to establish them all, and he kind of meets his character. And he kind of has that dream sequence where we introduce her, where we see that one version of Doctor Strange gets wiped out.
Yep.
And then he meets her while he's battling that big old squid like monster in the New York City streets there.
Yep.
With a pretty awesome opening action scene. And then they kind of set off on this like adventure to go across the multiverses to find out why it's all screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they go to recruit help. And initially, Doctor Strange goes to recruit help from good old Wanda, you know, fresh off the WandaVision show they kind of referenced, but they don't really jump into all the details that happened in the WandaVision show, but they kind of reference just some just quick core details of what she was up to. But and instead of coming for help, Wanda's still mad that she lost her kids from the TV show, that she doesn't really have them with her anymore. And she's all against Doctor Strange and turns out to be the main villain for the movie.
Yeah, and you know, and like we were talking about when we watched this too, it was a really good, I don't know what the word I'm looking for here is, but you have a magician, you know, Doctor Strange, and then you have a witch, you know. So it's kind of cool having the idea of like these two battling each other that are both magical powers, but they're like magical in historical ways of kind of like how you would. I'm really having a hard time explaining this, but if you think about like an old book, you know, if you want to fight a witch, what do you fight a witch with? A wizard.
Mm-hmm.
So you got
kind of like the paper, rock, scissors of the mystical forces.
Yeah. I mean, so you're not just going to take on a witch with somebody that's like, you know, a superhero like Captain America. You're going to take on a witch with some type of other magic because
mm-hmm.
they're both magical in a way. And I thought that was really cool. So having Doctor Strange go against the Scarlet Witch and like her abilities, you have no idea like how powerful she actually is until you see this movie.
Yeah, she is. This is kind of. I had a little bit of familiarity with her, how powerful she was from just some of the comic arcs that I've read in the actual comic books over the years. Like, there's this one big Marvel event book called House of M from the mid 2000s, big X-Men book, and that's kind of establishes how she's kind of just screwed up the universe, kind of like how she did in this movie. And that's where you're like, wow, Scarlet Witch is one of the most powerful characters in the Marvel universe. And I really dug how they got her costume for this movie, because it kind of had a few interesting, amusing takes for her older costumes in the WandaVision show, but here they kind of modernized it up a bit, and with the special effects and all that, and you see her battling the Illuminati, and I guess we could get into there, because Doctor Strange and America, they go to the Illuminati board, or I guess they're kind of tricked into going into there. They get drugged, and I guess they kind of have to face a panel for what they're up to, and that's, we're introduced to a lot of big bug-eyed moments in here where it's like, wow, they're bringing in these characters.
Yeah, well, and you know, going back to when we were talking about how powerful the Scarlet Witch was, I mean, so if you actually watch the Avengers Endgame, you know, Thanos is like the most powerful being in the universe, and in the movie he says, "Who are you?" And she's like, "Don't worry, you'll remember." And she was the reason that he had to bring down and destroy his own army, because she was holding him in the air and ripping the armor completely off of his body. Like, and you know, and then she came in at one point and she was like mowing down all the other little monsters or whatever that were going around. And they're like, why was she hiding up in the castle this whole time? Like, why was she out here helping us? But the fact that, you know, Thanos was like getting his ass kicked by her. And then you see, you know, going into this, and then now with this Illuminati, that was really cool, because you can see that is a sneak peek into movies that are to come, because the characters that were played, those are big name actors.
Yeah.
So those weren't just cameos. Those people have movies that are going to be coming out soon. I guarantee it.
Yeah, most likely in the works, or long rumored to be in the works. Like, I know John Krasinski, he was much rumored, I guess, a lot of fan outcry to have him play. And, you know, I guess, yeah, we're going to go down the roll call, the Illuminati here. Or at least in this one of the many universes in the multiverse, he's playing Reed Richards, you know, Mr. Fantastic. And then we also had they brought back that one show that was on ABC, the Inhuman show. I don't know if you remember that. That's where the Black Bolt came from. You know, the guy with the fork on his head, as they amusingly referenced on the movie there. That's Black Bolt. And then they had their own version of Captain Marvel in this movie, a different character.
So that Captain Marvel, I would have to look back on it, but so I wanted to see if that Captain Marvel was actually her friend in the Marvel movie. Was it the same actress?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, so the other co-pilot that she was with.
Mm-hmm.
So in the alternate universe.
Yep, not Brie Larson, but yeah, I forget the name of the actress for her co-pilot, yeah.
Yeah, the black girl that had the daughter that mm-hmm. she was friends with. So was that the actress that was...
But this version's Captain Marvel?
It was her.
I believe so. Yeah, I want to say I checked it online afterwards. I want to say that I'm like 90% sure.
Yeah, because I just watched Captain Marvel the other day, and I'm like, wait. I wonder if that was Captain Marvel in this one.
Yeah, I think they switched up her hairdo a little bit for this one, so you couldn't tell right away. Yeah, and then we also have, of course, like we referenced earlier, Professor Xavier. They bring back Patrick Stewart. And
that's Sir Patrick Stewart.
Sir, yes, I guess, yes. He is officially knighted, Sir Patrick Stewart. And not only did they bring him back as Charles Xavier, which is a big deal because this is his first time coming into an official MCU movie after Fox has been acquired by Disney, because all the X-Men movies made before were under the whole Fox umbrella, but now they're part of the Disney. Now you could say he's officially part of the official MCU brand, canon of movies, however you want to describe it. But they brought back the X-Men animated cartoon and the comic books, the yellow wheelchair of awesomeness.
Yeah, that was my biggest surprise of this whole movie, was all of a sudden seeing Professor X roll out, because X-Men has not been involved in any of these Marvel movies whatsoever. And I wish the X-Men movies would have been done by the directors of these Marvel movies, because they do such a better job than the director of the X-Men movies.
They've kind of had faint, like, they made deals with Fox before to get mutants in, a couple of mutants in the past MCU films, but they just couldn't call them mutants. Like, Scarlet Witch is technically an X-Men mutant character, and...
Oh, is she?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
And same with from Age of Ultron, her brother. They couldn't call him Quicksilver, but Pietro that they killed off in Avengers: Age of Ultron. He was only in that one movie, but he was officially their version of a mutant too. So, but yeah. But,
well, what was the difference between? So you had in the X-Men movies, I mean, you had the one that was Magneto's kid.
Yep.
I thought that was Quicksilver.
Yep, that is the Fox version of Quicksilver. Yeah. Oh. So they had the rights to call him Quicksilver, but they allowed that character to come into the MCU movies. They called him by his real name, but they just couldn't call him Quicksilver or a mutant for
whatever reasons. So they're basically the same person, though?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
Which made it interesting when watching the WandaVision TV show, because that the Fox version of the Quicksilver appeared for a couple episodes in the Disney Plus show. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that it just of course when you get all it's a fun thing to get tangled up in diving into it, but of course it kind of leads to the whole final act where I guess we should mention the Illuminati. They kind of get their butts handed to them by the Scarlet Witch in a great scene where the darkness, I guess you could say, or like the more edgier content compared to other Marvel movies for other superheroes or characters, villains meet their demise. Scarlet Witch really takes care of them.
Yeah, I was actually kind of disappointed in that scene, you know, because like Mr. Fantastic, I was like, you know, looking forward to this really cool fight scene between them, and it just.
She just kind of instantly wipes the floor.
It was just like, okay, your reality is done. Boom.
Well, I imagine there's going to be, you know, of course, this happened on multiverse dimension number XY2.4 or whatever, or they can just say a quick brush of the stroke line of dialogue to where their deaths didn't really matter. And, you know, almost every character they killed off in a past Marvel movie, they find a way to bring them back.
Yep.
Yeah, so yeah, but I thought it was interesting just in the moment seeing them just take care of them. I'm like, wow, they're kind of going this far with it. But so you kind of get into the big final act then where, you know, like Scarlet Witch and Doctor Strange. Of course, we haven't mentioned, too, we should make sure to give a shout-out to, you know, Doctor Strange's fellow, the actual official Sorcerer Supreme, Wong. He's pretty good in here, too.
Oh, he's always funny.
Yeah, and he makes sure, he kind of a running joke where he wants to make sure Doctor Strange pays him respect with a bow, and there is a nice little payoff to that towards the end there, too. So, yeah, he's awesome in here as well. So, how did you like how the whole final act played out? Did you like the way everything kind of rectified there at the end there?
Well, I started to doze off.
Oh, no.
Well, not because of the movie. I was just really...
Real long day.
Malnutritioned, I think. I mean, that's why I want to watch it again, because there was like so much that went into it. I mean, I still am trying to understand the... Third Eye, you know, Strange and everything.
That's a big thing coming out, because as the film wraps up, you know, it seems like all is well. You know, of course, Doctor Strange and America Chavez prevailed, and everything kind of gets righted. And you know, there's a lot of multiverse hopping in the end here, where you kind of see Wanda hopping back from her being her current villain self to hopping back to her seeing a good version of Wanda in like the Disney version of the Disney Plus version of the show, and kind of trying to find her kids. That all plays a big factor. And
I really like the. You know, when, you know, Strange is coming back into this other reality, but he's taking over his dead self and he's casting these spells. But then there's like, this is forbidden to do, Strange, while he's actually fighting the witch. And it would, like, that just played out so cool. And then I just wish I could, that's why I want to watch it again, because I want to understand that part of the movie more, because I think that's where that kind of like third eye comes in and everything. And yeah, I mean, it was just cool.
Yeah, it was, I guess you could say that's kind of how they kind of tease a movie towards the end. There's a nice, where Dr. Strange passes out, but all of a sudden he wakes up with like a third eye, the eye of Agamotto, I believe is what it's looked up, referred to as in the Dr. Strange canon. There's some great articles online where there's probably a dozen or so little references or stuff that I didn't get, because, you know, I'm not like a hardcore Doctor Strange comic reader, so I wanted to make sure to pick up on things that I missed. And I'll make sure to give a shout out to the LATimes.com and just time.com. both did great just kind of like Easter egg breakdowns of, oh, here's this reference and there's this character. This is how they were explained in the comics and this is how they played a factor and how they may play a factor in the movies. So they did nice, thorough kind of like Easter egg breakdowns. Were there any like little Easter eggs or side characters that caught your eye from like past shows or movies or just from the comics that you wanted to give a shout out to?
No, I think the Illuminati was just probably the biggest Easter egg.
The main thing. And of course, I want to make sure to reference too, you know, if you're a Sam Raimi fan with him doing his certain, he has a kind of like a little trademark for Easter eggs in his past movies. Rest assured, those are in here too. Mm-hmm. So if you're Sam Raimi fans, you know what to expect. If you're looking for in Sam Raimi movies, there's definitely some of those. And yeah, the post-credit stinger is, I looked up the character that was in there. It's Charlize Theron played this, just makes a quick cameo as this, I looked it up, it's a Viking-like lady named Clea, and she's demanding help from Doctor Strange to help rectify, I think she called it an incursion in the multiverse, so just to fix more stuff in the next Doctor Strange movie, presumably. So yeah, definitely big, big thumbs up to Doctor Strange, safe to say.
Oh yeah, big time. Yeah. I'm going to go see it again.
Yeah, same here. Yes, yes. Or I don't know right away, but at least eventually, maybe probably when it hits video here, yeah. And yeah, the initial reviews, yeah, Rotten Tomatoes, critics, 76%, audience, 88%. At least that's the one I checked like 2 days ago, so it could be changed a little bit now. But yeah, definitely high recommendation on Doctor Strange. And just a friendly reminder, if you have an opinion on the Multiverse of Madness or any other past upcoming Marvel films, we want to hear from you guys in the chat. Interact with us by calling or texting us your questions, 701-213-0863. Or if you're watching live right now, just participate in the chat room, live every Wednesday at 2 p.m. on gfbestsource.com. So with that out of the way, we want to give a shout out to our friends at Valvoline Instant Oil Change, where life doesn't seem to ever slow down. Everything needs to be done right now when it comes time for an oil change. So make sure to stop on in to Valvoline Instant Oil Change. Most oil changes are done within 15 minutes. Paul, I know you mentioned you were there last week. You were in and out of there within, like, what, you said 10 minutes or so?
Oh, yeah, easily.
Yeah, yeah, they do it all. They do transmission and coolant flushes, tire rotations, batteries, also including the oil change. They'll top off your fluids, check your tires, battery, lights, wipers, cabin air filter. You'll get discounts for fleets and the military, too. And they'll text and email you invoices and coupons. And best of all, you mentioned GFBS. You get $10 off your oil change. So Valvoline Instant Oil Change, they're open Monday through Saturday with no appointment needed, and pickup and delivery is available in Grand Forks, too, if you're constantly on the go there, checking out other places around Valvoline. So, yeah, they'll make sure to get a hold of you right when your vehicle's good to go. So come to Valvoline Instant Oil Change for a complete oil change and more. They are located at 3325 South 38th Street, right outside of Target there. Or you could call them up at 701-780-8462 and tell them GFBS sent you. So we're going to run down just a couple of quick noteworthy theatrical streaming new releases here for the week. And this is what we got hitting here, what I dug up here. A new series launching on Netflix this week. It's called The Penteverate. Katie, have you ever heard of this movie, early 90s one, So I Married an Axe Murderer?
No, I haven't.
It's Mike Myers' one where he's kind of like a little deranged 1993. He marries what turns out to be an axe murderer, and she's just kind of chasing him throughout. And this is actually a sequel of sorts to that movie many, many years later. And Mike Myers, he doesn't do too many movies nowadays. I don't remember him, but, you know, Wayne from Wayne's World. And of course, I guess he's probably more commonly remembered as Austin Powers. Of course, he's that probably legendary character. So, yeah, but yeah, Mike Myers, he is back. And yeah, this is a 6-part episode show that follows Canadian journalist Ken Scarborough as he embarks on a journey to expose a secret society called the Penteverate in order to earn his job back. And the society has all five members being played by Mike Myers, like he's kind of known to do in some of his movies, play multiple versions of characters. Paul probably remembers that, right? So I Married an Axe Murderer.
Yeah, I saw the preview for this yesterday, and I was going to watch it, but then I was thinking, this looks like one of those over-the-top Michael Myers movies. You know, like, so I Married an Axe Murderer. Fantastic movie. I love it when he plays roles where he's not just completely over-the-top. You know, like Austin Powers, he's just
That is completely over the top satire.
It's the same thing with Jim Carrey. That's, you know, I like Jim Carrey in serious roles.
Yes.
I like Mike Myers when he does roles where he's funny, but he's not just like trying so hard to be funny.
Yeah, there's some where he's trying way too hard. It's too like, oh gosh, there's too many, like, cuz yeah, he did so many, like, in the 2000s, like, so many misses, and that he just kind of fell off. Like, I think this is the main first notable thing I think he's done in a while.
So, like, okay, let's go to Austin Powers, for instance. So, Dr. Evil, I think he's hilarious as Dr. Evil.
Oh, yeah.
But when he's, like, the Goldfinger guy or whatever, I'm just like, this is just stupid.
Yep. No, you know? Yeah. Some of those, yeah, because, yeah, he plays multiple characters in the Austin Powers movies, and, of course, you know... Austin Powers, you know, they are what they are, but I think I remember liking at least a couple of them, the earlier ones. But yeah, as the later movies went on, it's like, all right, I think I'm falling off of these. Yeah, like you said,
yeah, like, member. I love him in Wayne's World, but I hate him as Austin Powers.
Yeah. Yeah, Austin Powers, I think I liked the first one originally, but I think as the years went on and just seeing clips over again, definitely did not hold up for me, but the Wayne's World movies are still among my favorite comedies over the years.
Yeah, so he's really hit or miss. So I was really tossed up as to whether or not I was going to watch this, and just from looking at it, I'm probably going to pass. I think he's
same here.
I think he's probably just going into this one. He's just going to try too hard.
So I guess moving on here.
So here's a good example of it. I like dry humor. I don't like potty humor.
Oh, yeah, same here. I'm the same way, yeah. Nice little subtle quick jokes. Yeah. So it's like, you know, if you're kind of all of a sudden paying attention, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, that's, like, yeah, we'll be talking about it later. Star Trek has a lot of, like, at least the earlier Star Trek has a lot of subtle humor where all of a sudden you just kind of got to be paying attention all of a sudden. But, yeah, like the forced humor, forced gags, or, yeah, potty humor, yeah, that's maybe 20% of it will hit for me, but the other 80% is just groan.
Yeah.
Wait, so a dry humor, no, potty humor, would that be like Dumb and Dumber? I need an example here.
Yeah. Okay, so dry humor would be, you know, if we were sitting here and say Dale farted, and then we all were like, you know, and it was like a, you know, we all just were like, oh my God, we cracked some jokes about it, and we had a funny laugh about it. As opposed to Dale being like, I'm going to fart. Okay. You know, like, there's a difference between the two.
Okay. Now I get it.
Yeah.
I learn something new every day when I'm here.
Woo! Filmmaking 101. Yes. Yeah. But no, yeah, I'm with you. I like it where it's not forced. Yeah. So next up, we have another series streaming. This is a season 2, not a season 1, called The Wilds on Amazon Prime Video, where it's an original adventure mystery drama series. Picks back up where the teenagers are stranded on an island just as they have realized they were placed there as part of a social experiment. Stakes will rise in season 2 as new drama and challenges take place.
It's going to suck.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the first season, so... but it was on the main noteworthy list I was referencing, so I thought I would include it. Here's a new film streaming on Hulu launching this week called Hatching. A 12-year-old gymnast, Tinja, finds an egg in the forest and decides to bring it home and incubate it herself until a bizarre creature hatches. It soon becomes Tinja's living nightmare. Starring Siri Solana, Sophia Hikila, and Johnny Vallanen, and it's directed by Hannah Bergholt. Next up is The Takedown, a film streaming on Netflix, and it's a buddy cop comedy with Diakite and Mong as police officers who are complete opposites, and they get paired together to uncover an unexpectedly big criminal case. Starring Omar Sy, Laura Lafitte, and Izia Higuelin, then it's directed by Louis Leterrier.
Come up with some new ideas, people.
Yes.
God, all these have been done.
Yeah, this is a Netflix original. Seemed like a very cookie cutter buddy cop formula movie there, but yeah, nothing too special. But this last one, saving the best for last, Firestarter in theaters this Friday, and I guess they're doing the early premiere tomorrow technically. But it's a new adaptation of Stephen King's classic thriller, where a girl with extraordinary pyrokinetic powers fights to protect her family and herself from sinister forces that seek to capture and control her. And this one's going to be starring Zac Efron, Sidney Lemon, and Ryan Kira Armstrong, and it's directed by Keith Thomas. And we're I want to make sure to reference that if you guys didn't catch it yet on the GFBS shows, check out last Friday's Icky Ichabod's Weird Cinema, where we reviewed the original Firestarter from 1984.
Yeah, and actually, like, where did you pull this description of the movie? Was that straight from a website, or did you make that on your own?
I think I tweaked a couple of little things, but yeah, I pulled it right from the River Cinema's listing.
Because I can already see right now. Mm-hmm. So it's an adaptation of a girl with pyrokinetic powers that fights to protect her family. That's not how the movie went.
Yeah, yeah.
The movie is her dad trying to protect her from the government, and like, so, you know, I can see that the government is trying to capture and control her, but she's not fighting to protect her family in that movie at all.
Yeah, I know, at least in the original, I think there was a couple of scenes where she's kind of fighting off a couple of the shop forces a little bit.
For one thing, she's only like five.
Right, yeah.
You know, so even, this is why I hate remakes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they could be twisting up a little bit for the new one here.
Yeah, and like we talked about in the show too, I mean, they made it look like she's like 16 in this one. So, I mean, maybe they're going to... I just think that they're not going to go off the original storyline, and they're just going to try to make some superhero movie out of it. But we'll see what happens.
We'll see.
We'll cover it on Friday.
Yep, yeah, we'll cover it. Yeah, we'll be releasing it as a... as our show for next week will be a special live on location episode. So we'll be grabbing reactions from people before and after the movie, and we'll be doing our special like pre-show takes and after show takes. So it'll be a very special episode next week of Big Screens and TV Streams. So yeah, make sure to stay tuned for that. So, but I guess from all these pick of the week, though, at least hopeful pick of the week. but yeah, from there we will go to covering, I'm just going to make this super quick. I've been kind of saving for my quick takes the last few weeks, but since they both had their season finales over the last week, I'm going to be covering the season finales of Picard and Moon Knight. So, yeah, again, spoilers for both. So if you haven't seen them yet, jump ahead. So, yeah, so we'll start off with Moon Knight first, where I'll just keep this real quick, where Arthur Harrow is becoming, you know, the character played by Ethan Hawke. He's becoming more powerful now that he has that, he captured this main staff that kind of allows him to instantly takes people's souls. And, yeah, and of course, now the other gods are trying to stop him. You get the love interest, Layla. The gods are trying to recruit her to become an avatar for some of them. And, like, they really go all out with the avatars and the Egyptian gods and mythology in these last couple episodes. It actually kind of made the show really cool to follow the last couple episodes. It really picked up the last couple of episodes. A lot more main action scenes where they kind of have a lot of big people squaring off. And they kind of go more all out where you can see, like, the... multiple identities of Spectre and Steven, they actually start to get along, and they start to change identities on the fly instead of against their own will. And just watching the way that developed and the way they kind of, the way you get Steven's character has the weird version of Moon Knight where he's in a kind of like a tuxedo. But you can see behind me, this version of Moon Knight's played by the mercenary Spectre. And yeah, that version is way more cool to follow. But the way they get their characters to fight interchangeably, just change on a whim to fight the last couple of main battles in the last couple of episodes, made it real interesting to follow. And they kind of,
I've heard this movie, I've heard the show has flopped. I've been
not really good viewership, or
yeah, I've been seen a lot of people say, yeah, like, yeah.
It took me like the first, it's only six episodes, so it's not that much of a commitment at least. But the first four episodes, it was a lot to just kind of put together and follow, watching the multiple identities develop. Because yeah, Steven and Spectre, they're alternate personalities. Multiple identity disorder, and just kind of watching them flip and just kind of explain that, follow that. It's a bit of a mess to follow up with. But by like episodes five and six, they kind of have they introduce some new aspects to the show where he gets hospitalized, and then Arthur Harrell is like his psychiatrist, but instead it's just more mind game stuff. It's really hard to explain, and then there's a big stinger twist too, where there are even more potentially new developments with the split personalities, but the way they collide with Arthur and the way Arthur kind of meets his maker kind of at the end. I thought they had a good wrap up, at least the last episode. I thought it wrapped up nicely. I don't want to say it's still must-see destination viewing, but I thought it saved the whole run of the show from being a total time waster. So I'll give Moon Knight as a whole, the whole season one, a very mild recommendation, just because it's six episodes. So, but yeah, not, definitely not must see. As far as Picard goes, the series finale for that, you know, it's all leading up to that Europa mission launch, and of course, you know, the character we know as Data, his character, he's playing one of the many versions of a Dr. Soon in the reality of 2024, just a couple of years in the future, and he's trying to stop the Europa mission launch, and you know, Picard and his crew, they're trying to prevent him from doing it, and of course, it's not really a big, they prevent him from messing with things, so the Europa mission goes as planned. And there's a couple scenes in here where I thought it kind of, I don't want to say it saved the show from being a disaster. I'm with you, Paul. It's definitely very, very not must-see viewing. It just kind of, as the show went on, it was just dragging. And the way they get, you know, the Jurati's character kind of turns into a hybrid Borg with the Borg Queen. It just wasn't fun to follow. But the last episode has a couple awesome scenes where they bring back, again, major spoiler, they bring back Wesley Crusher after not being seen in the Star Trek show since towards the end of The Next Generation. And I don't know if you remember that. Do you remember what happened to Wesley at the end of Next Generation?
Not a clue.
Well, early in the run, they had that character called the Traveler. And they're like, oh, Wesley, you're special. Big things are in store for you. And then he appears many years later to cart Wesley off and be like, do you want to be a traveler? And so Wesley goes off with this guy to become a traveler. And they kind of explain what that is. Wesley comes back and he recruits one of the people in the show, Corey. And it's like, hey, the travelers are, you know, this is what we are. We kind of pick core moments in species history over the years and eras and generations to get involved, and if we could tell things are heading into disaster, and recruits her to become a traveler. And it's a pretty big moment, pretty straight. It's only like a few minutes long, but it was really cool to see Wesley Crusher come in and just nail at least that brief scene out of the park, and it got me pretty hopeful for what's in store for the final season. But I don't want to say totally optimistic, but it was a nice big step up from everything else that from the last several episodes.
Well, it's nice to see that he made an appearance so he can pay rent this month.
Yes. he has been hosting some of the other shows on Paramount Plus. They do like a bonus after show for the Star Trek shows called The Ready Room, where he interviews cast and crew. And I watched a handful of those episodes, and he's really awesome to watch on those. But he's totally all in on the Star Trek universe. But so that was kind of cool to see. And then they kind of, Q and Picard kind of have a nice final scene here too, because, you know, they've been bringing Q back for this show as the main, of course, meddling with Picard like he always does. And they have a very heartfelt final chat where just kind of like Q's kind of pretty much saying, he's like, I'm dying. I'm going on my own way. This is like my whole last challenge and my last test for you. And kind of brings them back to their present, out of the past. And just the way that wrapped up was pretty nice, but I'm still not, I'd still say for Picard season two, you don't need to see it. Just maybe look up on YouTube a couple of the scenes I just described and you'll be fine not watching, wasting your time on the season two. So, yeah.
See, the thing that bothers me the most about this show is, well, A, it sucked.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
I don't think I'm like that down on it, but I'd say it's very skippable.
So, Sir Patrick Stewart in Logan, he played the perfect,
yes,
senile, like old Professor X.
Mm-hmm. Logan,
and he should have ended it at that, because now he's starting to bring that character into everything else he does.
Oh, I guess, yes.
So, he needs to retire. Even in Doctor Strange, it was like, okay, dude,
You're getting
up there, man. You're starting to look like Joe Biden. Like, just retire, go to your vineyard, enjoy some wine, and quit acting, because you're
saying you may have lost a step or two.
Yeah, he's getting a little shaky.
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to say
I only say that because I don't want the image of him to be ruined.
You don't want to see his legacy tarnished.
Captain Picard is like, that's somebody that you, like, that's an idea that everybody would want to be, is like that character, that person. And then to see him kind of like deteriorating in these shows and movies and everything that he keeps doing, it's kind of just, I think it's ruining his image.
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't mean this in a disparaging way at all. I mean, with the most utmost respect, I don't want to. You're not off the mark on that on that take, because yeah, he could tell he's still good, but you could tell, you know, there's some things that are just quite not up to how, you know, the same Picard that we all know and love, and not just from always a little older or something. Like, I don't know, it could just be the way he is now. It could not be. I have no idea, but I guess it could be the main reason why they already filmed seasons 2 and 3 back to back. For who knows? For all I know, maybe Patrick Stewart has something going on. He just, you know, just respects his privacy. He just doesn't want to disclose anything.
It's not like he doesn't have the money. I mean, he doesn't need the money, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So just stop and just go to your vineyard and enjoy your wine and just quit acting, dude.
But yeah, they already filmed season 3 back to back. So I'm guessing they're waiting a year to release it. So and they said that will be the last season, and that they're actually bringing back the Next Generation. All the crew members will be on it.
In hindsight, though, that's kind of mean to say. I mean, you know, if I was...
I don't know if I want to be like, dude, hang it up. But at least maybe more minor appearances and stuff. Like, pick...
Yeah. Like, I mean, I wouldn't want to tell the guy, like, hey, just, you know, go, you know, sit in your retirement home and shut up or anything like that. But at the same time, kind of go sit in your retirement home and shut up.
Oh, no. No. I think it'd be cool if he kind of dials it back, kind of picks his spots instead of doing, like, full-on... extent like lead roles.
Yeah.
I think I'd be more in that direction. But of course, whatever Patrick feels he could do, I trust him. So, all right, we'll move things along here. Just a couple of quick news items here to go over before we kind of cover our last of the shows we usually keep up with here. This is kind of a big deal. Netflix announced the Cobra Kai season 5 launch date, and they kind of did a big trailer for it too. It's going to be September 9th. So yeah, just a few months out here. And the trailer was pretty interesting. I don't know if you saw it, Paul, but it's...
No, I didn't.
Silver, the main villain who teamed up with Kreese in the previous season. If you guys remember, we covered Cobra Kai season 4 in one of our first episodes here. He kind of betrays Kreese, sends him off to jail, and now Johnny and Danny, they got to put their differences aside again as Cobra Kai expands. So, yeah, that's...
These seasons just keep getting worse and worse. I mean, like... I think they should have just ended it at the first one.
I love the first two seasons.
Because they were comedy, and now they're trying to, like, take it into, like, some serious notes or whatever, and I don't know. I
still like it for the most part, but I think season 4 especially, you could tell the show is definitely starting to overstay its welcome. I hope season 5 is going to be the last season.
I mean, at least it's something for me to watch.
Yeah.
You know,
and season 4 did have an awesome, like, 2-episode karate tournament. I thought the way they did the karate tournament for the season 4 was very awesome.
It's not even karate. The karate in this show sucks. At least have some good karate.
I guess I've been reading more behind the scenes stuff. I guess they say they intentionally shot a lot of the fights in this for Cobra Kai to pay homage to the way the fights were shot for shot in the original movies.
Yeah, which also sucks.
I was going to say for better or worse. But yeah, so yeah, Cobra Kai season 5, September 9th. And then this, I completely forgot this was coming out. It's coming out soon here in just a couple of months. But HBO released a trailer for the new Game of Thrones prequel series, House of Dragon. And it's set 200 years before the original series. And it stars Paddy Considine as King Targaryen, Olivia Cooke as Alicent Hightower, and Emma Darcy as Princess Targaryen, and Matt Smith as Prince Daemon Targaryen, and it's set to premiere August 21st. Have you been keeping up with this at all, Paul?
Yeah, it already pissed me off.
Oh, you saw the trailer for it?
Yeah, I saw the trailer for it yesterday, and I was like, oh, cool, and I wanted to watch it, and then I clicked on it, and it was like, trailer coming out September 27th or something. I was like, God dang it!
Oh, yep. Yeah,
so I thought I had something to watch.
Got a couple months out. I'm excited for it, you know, even if whether it could live up to the high bar set by most.
I think it's going to be awesome. I have really high expectations for this.
And I guess, yeah, George R. R. Martin's involved again and all that. So, yeah, it's got the backing, and hopefully, you know, it could be a worthy spinoff series or prequel series. Finally, last news item. I brought this up because I was a big fan of the original Quantum Leap.
Are you shitting me right now?
Not a fan of the original Quantum Leap.
No, you're telling me that they're making a new Quantum Leap.
Yep, and this is announced by NBC. Nearly 30 years since the Scott Bakula-led original series signed off after a 5-year run on NBC. I love the original show.
I watched Quantum Leap every day.
Yes, Yeah, like
this is another thing where they're probably just going to ruin it. I mean, yeah. You can't have Jordy in 2022.
Yes, yes. Well, it's like a whole new cast. It's
what's this about?
Quantum
this
Leap.
Sounds like a nerd thing.
Surprise!
Hey, so welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show. Yeah. Yes, yes, yes. You get surprise. You got movie and TV nerds hosting the movie and TV show.
Yeah, yeah.
But Quantum.
Sorry to disappoint.
Yes.
Hold on. Let me just curl some dumbbells over here while we talk about Firestarter and Quantum Leap.
Okay, continue your thought.
God.
Continue.
But yeah.
But at least we can helicopter.
Wow. I was not expecting that one.
But
especially live.
Yes, but Quantum Leap was an awesome show in the late 80s, early 90s, where this guy, every episode he'd have the ability to magically inherit a random person's body and can change a moment in time, pretty much. And that was a real fun show to watch. I saw
it was not magically.
It was he was teleporting.
He's a time traveler.
Yeah, time traveler. Yeah, he had that device where he teleported. And time traveler. And he kind of always had a big way to kind of affect time past wrongs. And the first season just wrapped production, and it follows a new team that has been assembled to restart the Quantum Leap project in the hopes of understanding the mysteries behind the machine and the man who created it 30 years since Dr. Sam Beckett stepped into the accelerator and vanished.
But you can't make Quantum Leap without Scott Bakula.
Yeah, so, I guess, it said he vanished. I want to say several years ago, I rewatched the series finale to Quantum Leap just for a refresher on how it all wrapped up. And so who knows, maybe he'll come back to return as or maybe make some small appearances.
I can still hear the music in my ears. The intro song.
Oh, yeah. Gosh, yeah.
God, I hope they don't ruin this. Because, I mean, Quantum Leap was an awesome show, but good God, they better not ruin this.
Yeah.
And just everything's a remake. I mean, you got Firestarter, Quantum Leap. I mean, it's just, come up with an original idea, people.
Yes.
Good God.
Well, we'll keep marching along here. Star Trek Strange New Worlds, just some quick first episode impressions. Of course, right when Picard wrapped up, Paramount Plus had to launch a new Star Trek show. Paul, did you see this one yet?
Nope.
So, I'll just keep this short and sweet, but Star Trek Discovery in Season 3, they introduced a couple of characters there that would helm this show here for Star Trek Strange New Worlds, where we have a new version of Spock, played by Ethan Peck, and a new version of Captain Pike, played by Anson Mount. And, they're actually helming the Enterprise, and it's kind of like a prequel to the original series. So you actually see some very young versions of the characters we know and love from Star Trek, the original series. So as you can see behind me, we have a very young Spock and Pike here. He's one of the predecessors to Captain Kirk. And we actually meet a young Lieutenant Kirk, but it's actually Sam Kirk, Captain James Kirk's father. So, and then there's also Uhura, a very young Uhura on here as well, played by Celia Gooding. And the first episode's all about a first contact mission gone wrong, kind of playing off some of the stuff that happened in Discovery, where, I don't know if you remember for this, of course, this is dumb Star Trek nerd stuff, where the way they establish first contact is when a planet establishes warp drive capabilities, which allows them to, do faster than light travel in the universe. And so, but they find out this one planet did warp drive capabilities, but they use it to make a warp drive bomb instead of travel. So they have to go there and find some missing team members that were sent there for first contact that went wrong. And the way that all resolved was actually pretty cool, where Captain Pike gave a really good Captain Picard-esque, just diplomatic speech to, you don't want, because they want to use this bomb to stop the two main warring factions to just obliterate each other. So it was a really good first episode. And it reminds me more of actual classic Star Trek instead of the stuff that's on Picard and Discovery.
See, I always liked that idea of, the aliens or whatever showing up when, you make a discovery that takes your, your humanity or whatever as a whole mm-hmm. to like the next level. So now you're recognized by beings out there. You're not just like some primitive with a wheel and a hammer. So that was really cool with the warp drive. You know, I mean, for us, it could have been when we discovered the atom.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, maybe that's the first time that aliens ever came down to Earth and we don't even know about it. Or maybe they were the reason for it. But that's why I like these Star Trek shows and everything, is just because of the ideas that they have in place. And then you see, you know, even from the stuff back in the 80s from Star Trek, The Next Generation, and everything, that's all stuff that we use today. I mean, that was all future technology, and it's now all stuff that we use today.
Like, the automatic doors.
So, I mean, there's nothing that says that we couldn't, you know, all of a sudden discover some type of, like, warp drive light speed technology, and then it's going to get recognized, and then, you know, some other race comes down. They're like, all right, you guys are on the level now. We need to keep you in check.
Yep. Yeah, and that's... I'm with you too. Like at Next Generation, original series, and even some like No Deep Space Nine and Voyager, the whole exploring aspect of Star Trek, and just like this is kind of bringing back the episodic feel. It sounds like, you know, did a little reading behind the scenes just to see feedback from it. It sounds like this is not going to be like how Discovery and Picard was, where it's like a season long story. It's going to be more episode by episode story. But they said there'll be like maybe gradual season long just development for the characters, but the stories will be more self contained episode by episode, kind of like classic Star Trek.
Yeah. And that's my point, though, is like you had Gene Roddenberry. He had these ideas. And now, I mean, that idea in itself could be a movie. But instead, everybody just kind of they just want to remake everything. You could totally make a whole entire new movie, new whatever, off of just that idea alone, along with 10,000 other ideas that are out there. But... you know, you got people remaking Firestarter, remaking all this other stuff. And like, that's the one thing that Star Trek has above everything is when it originally came out, they were actually using technology and ideas, and they were way, way above the curve.
Yeah. There's some really awesome articles you find online where, you know, things first introduced in Star Trek or kind of amusingly enough, the Simpsons, that they kind of forecasted in the future where, you know, like technology-wise or just pop culture-wise that, well, hey, this is where things are going.
Well, and I think Star Trek is better than Star Wars just on an intellectual level. But Star Wars is still cool because it starts out with in a galaxy
far away.
Yep. But it's time. Mm-hmm. It was way, way, way before us. So it's not in the future. It's actually super far in the past. And that's a cool aspect to Star Wars. You know, so it's not future technology. It's past technology.
That was way farther than what we have at that time.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you have these cool ideas, and nobody's just coming up with these cool ideas anymore. They're all just trying to remake crap. Same with musicians. Like, nobody can come up with an original idea anymore. It pisses me off.
But yeah. First episode, good first impressions for Star Trek Strange New Worlds. I will be sticking with it. Just like I recommend everyone stick with our friends at CNH Insurance of East Grand Forks, where CNH Insurance began with the goal of building an agency with the highest of principles, personalized attention, and service. This concept remains to be their priority today. They strive to give everyone who walks through their doors special attention and the best customer service possible. Their agents have over 50 years of combined insurance experience. They are licensed in Minnesota, North Dakota, and Arizona. So for all your insurance needs, contact Justin, Jody, or Tammy at 218-773-0287 or stop by their location at 1427 Central Avenue Northwest in East Grand Forks. That's CNH Insurance of East Grand Forks. GFBS insures through CNH, and so should you. So we're just going to kind of lightning round these last couple of quick reviews here since we're a little long here. So next episode of Halo, seventh episode here. I'm just kind of going to run down that real quick here. So this episode was kind of dedicated more to like the side characters of the show. So we had, if you remember, Sorn, the Master Chief's old Spartan training buddy who kind of went astray from the whole Spartan UNSC Academy. He This episode's focused on him and Quan Ha. So if you remember a couple episodes ago in Halo, Soren and Quan, they kind of went to a planet to investigate some new leads there. And Soren kind of just leaves Quan out in the dust there, but then he kind of comes back, feels bad, and then has a guilty conscience. But then Quan traps him and handcuffs him and kind of steals his ride and kind of goes on her own way. And so this kind of follows those two. And yeah, Master Chief is pretty much a non-factor in this episode. The only Master Chief appearance in here is when Quan encounters a mysterious race of people that forces her to hallucinate a fight with Master Chief to learn a lesson where they want her to ultimately become a protector of a sacred portal. What's that noise?
Every day at 3 o'clock, depending on who's on the show next, that noise tells me that I have to promote it.
Ooh, there you go. Staying on top of it.
Yep. Heck yeah. As you were saying.
But yeah. So yeah, this is just pretty much forcing Quan and Soren to this episode focuses just on them. And so yeah, Quan has her thing where she learns to be a protector of a sacred portal, and then Soren ends up tracking her down because, you know, there's still a big bounty on her head, and he kind of is facing some people kind of questioning how, you know, he lost track of Quan and like, hey, why did you lose track of her? She has a big bounty on her head. And Soren takes care of business, teaches his people questioning him, hey, don't mess with me. I also want to make sure to reference that Halo has nothing to do with basketball. But, Halo.
Oh.
Yeah, it's all good. It's all good. But
I got distracted by the duck.
The evil ducks, but not. But yeah, so Paul, what did you think of the new episode? Halo focuses on the side characters this time. Did you have a nice little break from all the Master Chief stuff, or
no? I think they should just stick to Master Chief.
Yeah, same.
These little sidebars that they keep doing, they're just dumb.
Yeah,
they have no relevance whatsoever in like the grand scheme of the story. So I don't know why they keep going back to it. I mean, maybe it's 'cause they want to give that actor some airtime. I don't know.
That's what I thought too. Maybe they told him like, okay, you know, you guys are very small supporting characters in all these episodes. We'll give you one episode to yourselves. Like, you know, it seems like a lot of shows, they'll all right, we'll dedicate an episode to like in Lost, there's so many characters where besides like the main three or four characters, they usually dedicate one of the main side arcs to characters.
I don't even like that actor.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You know, I don't know his name, but
for which character?
The Spartan guy that went rogue.
Oh, Soren. Yeah. But he's all right. I wouldn't say he's great, but it kind of leads up to the episode. It has a big final battle against the Vinisher's name of the villain. His forces, his kind of like his rogues gallery there, where they kind of have
It was a good fight scene, mm-hmm. and everything.
Yeah, it was like your standard fight scene. It was fun to watch. I had a lot of good special effects, good action.
But yeah, I just think that they should get more to the plot of Halo.
Same here, yeah. Yeah, there's no Master Chief other than that weird hallucination for just a brief couple of minutes. Nor Cortana or Halsey or the Spartans.
And here's the thing. Like, if you're playing Halo, you're Master Chief.
Mm-hmm.
There's no sidebars mm-hmm. to Master Chief in the game. Like,
yeah.
So just stick with him through the entire series. It's his story. Follow it along those lines. You don't need any sidebars.
Yeah, so I could say it's a pretty easy. You'd be all right skipping this episode.
Yeah.
So okay, next up, season finale, Winning Time, and this has had the big lead up to where the finals, the championship game. They just jump right to it where the episode kicks off, where it's Game 5 in the NBA Finals against the Sixers, Lakers, and Sixers, with the whole season built up to. And the series is tied 2-2, and Kareem injures his ankle. And I remember that actually happening being a big deal where he kind of finished out the game, but you could tell Kareem tells Magic his season is done. And so Magic takes his place to start for Game 6 to kind of lead the squad, be the new kind of captain. How did you like how that set things up for the final episode?
That final episode was awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
I've said from the get-go, I never had any intentions of watching the show, and I'm really glad I did because I just couldn't wait for the next episode. This show was fantastic.
No, yeah, the more and more it went along, I just loved it more and more. And I know if people watch our sports show, Best Fork in Sports Arena, Monty has some interesting clarifications on stuff they're kind of exaggerating, stuff that wasn't spot on in history, but ultimately it makes for a better show for, you know, for the general public. So,
well, the one thing that I thought was really cool about this last episode is I've always heard of like the Swan Song.
Mm-hmm.
I never actually knew what it was.
Oh, and yeah.
That was kind of cool to get that little education.
Yeah, John C. Reilly gives us some nice tutelage on the origins of the Swan Song. That was actually pretty fun, pretty fascinating, and there was kind of like a nice little last scenes there from other characters throughout the season where you can see Coach Jack giving Coach Westhead his notes for the final team, even though he's officially not the coach for the last game. I thought that was a nice little last scene. And the way I really liked how they used the few brief moments of Larry Bird this episode where he's like, I want to be in the finals. And he's just watching from at home. And then how Magic had that weird dream with Larry Bird messing with him too.
And, you know, I don't think this show would be nearly as good, except whoever the actor is that plays Magic, he does a great job. Same with the guy that does Kareem.
Yeah, they're both phenomenal.
Their acting is, I mean, everybody's acting in this show is just, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, there isn't one person in the show that is a bad actor as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it was very well casted from top to bottom, all the major and bit players. Yeah, and you know, we're kind of teasing the first
few. Even the guy that plays Harwood, I mean, wow. Yeah. I mean, that's like Oscar-worthy.
Yeah.
Acting that guy is doing.
In the last episode and this episode, him and Kareem have some major emotional moments.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, they have another one where Haywood is kind of planning to put a hit on the Lakers when they get back. And then Kareem kind of confronts them there towards the end. And they have another kind of very emotional dialogue there back and forth. Just kind of like, hey, get it together, man.
But, I mean, being able to act like that, I mean, that doesn't just come naturally. Like, it's not like you just put somebody in a room. Like, they're pulling off a performance.
Yeah, they got a huge wide range.
Yeah, I think this show will be up for a lot of awards.
Yep, and they already announced that there is going to be a second season here. And, of course, nice big post-game celebration, a surprise. If you know your NBA history, they win the finals. And, they thought they kind of had a nice build-up for season two if they'll continue their success to build that Lakers legacy. That they, you know, for, you know, basketball fans know that they had a big legacy in the 80s, 90s until this day. So, season one overall thoughts. So, big thumbs up. Do you like, I think we kind of already touched on it. Was that a big factor for you that they kind of dramatized, kind of maybe exaggerated or fabricated some things for the sake of the show?
I wouldn't know either way because I didn't follow any of this stuff when. Mm-hmm. You know, I was younger, so
I knew some, but not quite not like a huge basketball historian. So, but yeah, so some of the things I probably went right over my head.
It would piss me off if I was like a family member and it's all completely fabricated, because most of the people that watch this are going to take it as fact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if I was like a family member of Westhead or something, and it was like, that's not the way he was at all, I'd be pissed. But
and I know Monty mentioned on Best Fork in Sports Arena, it sounds like some of the players that were, you know, represented in the show are actually starting to maybe form like a class action lawsuit maybe because of the way they didn't like they were represented on the show.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could even take that Harwood? Mm-hmm. Is that his name?
Yep.
I mean, if his family was like, okay, he wasn't nearly that big of a crackhead, I could see how you'd be pissed.
Mm.
But if he was. Yep. But people are going to watch it, so they're going to take it as fact. And well, whatever. It is what it is.
But yeah, huge thumbs up. I think of all the shows we've covered on here so far, we must have stuck with about a dozen shows so far. This is, I want to say, easily in the top two.
Oh, yeah, easily.
Yeah, so yeah. If you haven't already, jump on Winning Time on HBO Max. So we're just going to jump real quick here to our quick takes, any other things we've been keeping up with throughout the week. Katie, quick takes for the week. What have you been keeping up with?
Quick takes. Keeping up with nothing as far as shows. Tennis. Final away match is tomorrow. Finals, I already said that. Yeah,
Almost all wrapped up with school then, yay.
Yeah, I just have one more final.
Woo!
Get applause.
Mm-hmm. Katie, yeah. It's a movie and TV show.
I don't watch movies. I'm too busy for that. I'm doing other stuff. That's all I got to contribute to big screens and TV streams.
Hey, everything counts. So
tennis, that's the only thing I've watched.
Woo!
You're welcome. Is that a better answer for you?
Where do you stream tennis?
Yeah, do they stream the matches?
Technically, our Instagram page that I'm in charge of.
Oh, yeah?
Take that.
Oh, really? Okay, there you go. There you go.
You, you stream the games on Instagram?
Sometimes.
Because Instagram is like the worst platform to try to stream things on.
Well, apparently the high schoolers, that's all they're on. So.
That's you guys do it in like that vertical type
of sometimes every once in a while, like warm-ups. I'll go live every once in a while on their page.
Oh.
Yeah. That's all I got.
You guys should work on that.
Okay, we'll work on it. I mean, it's just girls tennis, so it's not like...
Oh, trust me, a lot of guys on TikTok will watch girls tennis.
Duly noted.
All right, Paul, quick takes.
So watched the last two episodes of Outer Range. Put a nice... Again, it's one of those ones where I'm just like, all right, can I have some type of idea of what the hell is going on here? And it still just keeps leaving you in the dark. But they do put a nice little twist at the end of the last episode to do some character development. But other than that, I mean, I'm just still waiting for it to just kind of have some type of closure come together. We'll see if they can pull it off. I think the next round is going to be the final episodes of the season. So we'll see what happens there. I watched, I told you I rewatched Captain Marvel because I thought the first time it was garbage. It's actually not that bad.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a good, like, second tier Marvel movie.
It's not bad. I mean,
I wouldn't say it was like upper top class, like Avengers or Captain America, Iron Man, but I thought it was like maybe next level good.
Yeah, it's okay. It's not bad.
Yeah.
And then I watched the 47 Ronin with Keanu Reeves.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen that one. It's always been on my major backlog of movies to watch. How was that?
It's not bad. You know, as far as fantasy movies go, it's pretty good, but Keanu Reeves is just so dry and boring in it. I mean, the guy could just... I mean, it's like he just rolled out of bed and was just like, I'm just going to make this movie. He has no expression.
Felt like a paycheck movie.
Yeah, it was totally a paycheck movie. And then they got, you know, some special effects fight scene at the end with a dragon. I mean, it's kind of cool. You know, if you were a high school kid, you'd be like, whatever. Yeah. Other than that, what else did I watch?
No, you referenced Pig, I think.
Oh, yes, yeah. Pig. So after taking your recommendation from Icky Ichabod's, fantastic movie.
Absolutely.
Very. I was not expecting that to be so good. I did. You know, you guys talked about like it being like Fight Club or Taken. I didn't see that at all.
I was going to say kind of like at the like on paper, but not actually how it played out. It's way more serious than how it sounds by like reading the description.
And, you know, the Fight Club part of it, that was the one part of the movie that I did not understand at all.
Yeah, it's only like a small part of the movie.
Yeah, so there's like underground club where just like chefs get beat up. Like, what was the point of that?
I don't think it's exclusively chefs, but I think that just because that's what Nicolas Cage's character was and like the way he was, I think it was like his whole, that character he questions, that's like his thing he runs on the side where, you know, people, exclusive club where I guess it doesn't matter the occupation where he's like, I know where to find him. Let's go here and here. It just happened to be located at a fancy restaurant.
And then you just have to take a minute of punching?
I guess, yeah. I guess he earned his respect, I guess.
Yeah, that part of the movie was so stupid. I didn't get that part at all. But there was a lot of really cool metaphors in that movie. And Nicolas Cage did an awesome job. It was refreshing because it wasn't like every other movie out there right now. I mean, I've already referenced this a couple of times today, saying like everything's a remake, like come up with an original idea.
Yeah, this is very...
This was very original. It was a good movie. It was entertaining. It was emotional, you know, had a lot of metaphors in there, made you think. It was good.
Yeah, and I think the way Ichabod and I talked about it, I think I tried to mention a couple of times how this is a way more serious and emotional movie than it sounds. But I think we kind of got a little sidetracked a couple of times in there. But, yeah, you could definitely find out more about it on this Friday's episode of Ichabod's Weird Cinema where Ichabod and I review Pig. And yeah, it's...
See, I wish they would get away with the term indie movie and just replace it with artistic.
Yeah.
Because an indie movie is like a movie that makes you think.
Yeah.
You know, like there's an underlying message that is in the script that isn't just like bluntly in front of your face.
And like another term I see used for these movies are like prestige movies. Yeah. That's what I consider Pig is, or just kind of like exactly how you described it. You know, ones that make you think they have a message. You know, it's not like your cookie cutter three act popcorn movie. Yeah. This one has like some major messages and like said metaphors for, you know, trying to, you know, overcome adversities or confront past personal crises. And the way Pig does that comes to a conclusion with all the major characters like having to deal with other past characters in their past life and conflicts to overcome is some major heartfelt stuff. I thought it wrapped up beautifully.
Yeah, I would highly recommend to a lot of people watching Pig.
Same here. And as far as quick takes for me, I got nothing noteworthy. We need to wrap this up. So thank you, everyone, for tuning into today's episode of Big Screens and TV Streams. If you want to get even more movie coverage, like I said, this Friday night at 9, Ichabod and I will be reviewing Pig. And we'd like to give thanks once again to today's sponsors at Poorhouse, Valvoline, and CNH Insurance. We welcome you to join us live for all future episodes every Wednesday at 2 on GFBestSource.com. Find all past episodes by subscribing to GFBS everywhere you find podcasts. Many thanks to Paul.
Whoop. Great show. I enjoyed the show a lot today.
Many thanks to Duncan, producer Katie.
See ya.
And many thanks for all of you for having us part of your day. Next week, like we said before, we have a very special On Location at the River Cinema episode of Big Screens and TV Streams episode with our live coverage of Firestarter. It's going to be a very awesome episode. You do not want to miss it. We will see you then. Goodbye.